Hello and welcome to Sports Dirt, home of the hot takes and land of the third Ontario lockdown. Sounds like a wrestling move. My name is Dan, and that over there is Joshy. Josh, how's it going, buddy, in these unprecedented, well, I guess this is the third time, so precedented times.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty precedented at this point. I mean, it kind of excites me, though, immediately thinking of Mr. Ford in, like, some kind of tight Speedo getting ready to just, like, lay the absolute lockdown on all of our asses. But before we get into it, let's kick it over to Izzy in the corrections department.
Hello, Jerky Crew, and happy Friday. Only one correction to mention. Last week, Dan mentioned that it was Herb Dean who was reffing and chose not to stop the Sean O'Malley and Thomas Almeida fight at UFC 260, but it was actually referee Mark Smith. See you weirdos next week.
Ah, shit.
Okay, so very minor, though. Yeah. Very minor.
Yeah, okay. All right. Sorry to Herb Dean there. I gave him a bit of a bad look. Eric Smith, that's your bad, all right?
And it was Mark Smith, so that's you're 0 for 2. You're 0 for 2, but that's why we have Izzy, you know? We had to kind of even out the fact that, you know, we just are talking so much shit week by week that it can't all be perfect. But let's get into our first topic, and I am excited about this one because I know it pisses you off, and we've talked about it more than one time. So I'm going to get right into it. Jack Campbell starts this. He's 10-0. He's only the second goalie in history. I think Carey Price, oddly enough, is the only other goalie to do that. So he's 10-0, 10 straight wins for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He sets a record. It's a 104-year-old record for the Toronto Maple Leafs for the longest winning streak by a goalie. Are you excited by that? Does that fire
that
you
piss
up?
Me off?
Well, because a couple weeks ago you said there is no controversy amongst the goaltending unit in Toronto.
Not.
And I would say every time he wins a game and every day that Freddie Anderson gets healthier, there's just more and more controversy.
I would argue the other way around. I'd say that they figured it out. There we go. Keep riding it. They're having good times now.
But what happens when Freddie comes back then?
I don't know. I'm just operating, I guess. I just kind of thought they'd make him disappear.
I see. The classic. It's possible. I mean, you know, Freddie's contract is up at the end of the year. So they're basically at a point. The fact that he hasn't been healthy and hasn't been able to play, like, even if he had put up a half-decent performance and, say, on the back end they knew, okay, we're going to ride with Campbell come playoff time. Let's try to flip Freddie. That would have been a best-case scenario with the trade deadline coming up on Monday. But now with him not healthy, him not playing, and even when he is playing, he's 13-8-2, 2.91 goals against, 8.97 save percentage. That is pretty weak behind such a strong team. So I don't think he has a lot of trade value. Again, him being injured offers no trade value. So it's kind of like, how do you have him come back healthy and then not give him a shot? Because it seems like the way the team is talking, they're just going to put him right back in net and they don't give a shit.
Yeah, I could see that, but I mean, I don't know if you really take Jack Campbell out right now. Maybe if you're playing, like, in Ottawa. Like, I know Leafs play Ottawa this weekend. I don't know. I don't think Fred Anderson has even skated in a while, so.
No, he hasn't.
Oh, he hasn't. No. Okay, so he's not expected back in a while. But, I mean, if you're playing, like, in Ottawa, or, you already know, like, Canucks have COVID. But, you know, one of those bottom feeder teams, like, maybe give him a start, right? Give him a couple conditioning starts. But I think, like, because he's in a contract year, like, maybe it's better for the team right now and better for the player to get some rest. I don't know. I'm sure he wants to get back in there as soon as possible, but is that better for him long term going for a big contract? Though he's got to prove himself, though, if he wants a contract. He can't sit out.
Yeah, see, from his perspective, I think, like, there's just, it's such a polarizing thing. Like, if he's, like I said, he's kind of had a weird year, a lot of up and downs. He's still a solid goalie. I still think he would be an improvement for, I would say, at least 10 teams in the NHL. So I think he will have a suitor. But you're right. If he comes back and he kind of plays like shit or just kind of plays mediocre and then they put Jack Campbell in and Jack Campbell's lining it up, it's kind of like, who's going to give him the money that he deserves? I don't really know. But I think it's interesting. And I will say, too, previously, the 9-game winning streak for Leafs goaltenders was a joint tie between Felix Potvin, Jacques Plante, and John Ross Roach, okay? So the fact that Jack Campbell has surpassed those gentlemen, particularly Felix Potvin, has been a legend in Toronto, and Jacques Plante is literally a legend in the game. So the fact that Jack Campbell now holds such a great honor with arguably the biggest and oldest NHL franchise is kind
of
crazy.
Yeah, and I think goalies are some of the more interesting specimen in all of sports, though, because like such random shit happens. They can go on top of the world one season and fall off and never be heard from again, or they can go from the bottom of the mountain to boom, right up to the top so quickly. Right, so it's, and at any age, I think that's what's fascinating about it too. At any age, like you're seeing guys like on the Panthers there, Chris Dredger was kind of bouncing around in ECHL, AHL, bounced around, you know, in the Ottawa system, you know, bounced around a couple other teams in the meantime, ended up on Panthers, and you know, he's kind of just running away with it right now. He's, I don't have the stats offhand right now, but I know he's doing, you know, if you've been watching them at all, they've been fantastic in front of him, of course, but he's been, you know, really solid back there and on his way to probably some sort of payday, right? And speaking of paydays, I saw Freddie Anderson before all this happened as like a overpay candidate. I thought for sure. I thought for sure some team would just overpay him, right, after this for some sort of, for his older years. But now I'm kind of seeing him, you know, potentially, like, is he like an underpay candidate? Does somebody get him on like some sort of flyer and then he's healthy next year and just rips it up?
I think that's definitely possible. What I will guess will happen is he'll end up on some kind of bridge deal, right? Like he's been around the block too much. He's been on, you know, on basically besides the shitty playoff performances, he's been on a strong team for the last little while. So I think that he's kind of a candidate to get something, not the dollar value, but the same kind of premise as like a Taylor Hall. Like no one wanted to lock up Taylor Hall for 4 or 5 years at $7 million, but they will give him a 1 year for $8 million and be like, okay, we'll prove it and then we'll lock it up kind of thing. So I could see somebody going in at, you know, $5 million, $5.5 million, like kind of keeping where his contract is and going for another year, because I don't even know if he deserves that at this point. And then if he lights it up, then I can see that kind of contract going up. But you're right, it's potential too, is that, you know, he hasn't shown up in the playoffs. He's had some injuries plaguing him for the last little bit now. He hasn't looked that good behind an absolutely dominant Toronto team, and especially with this one division, they're kind of beating up on duster teams. So for him to have this 13-8-2 record with kind of like a, you know, run of the mill goals against, a pretty trash save percentage, I mean, I could see, you know, him hitting the market, not getting the calls that he wants, and getting stuck on a deal that he doesn't want to take.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, enough about Anderson. You talked about the Leafs and how strong of a team they are. So assuming he doesn't come back and they start the playoffs just, you know, with Jack Campbell.
Yep.
Now what do you think? So now I feel like if he doesn't come back, there's still no controversy. And I think they're kind of in good shape. I don't know. I think they're kind of smooth sailing.
I think if he doesn't come back, I agree with you, then there is no controversy, right? Because what are you going to do? You're not going to put fucking Hutchinson in net. So Jack Campbell seems to be the guy. I do. You know what? Before I get into that part of that question, I have a question for you. So I think in the past we've talked about, you know, Anderson versus Campbell as far as who's actually the fundamentally better goaltender. And I think we're both in agreement, if you had 100 games, that Anderson, you know, is probably the safe choice. But one thing I found really interesting yesterday was that at the end of that game, that celebration with Marner and Jack Campbell when he got the 10th win was just so nice to see. You can see a genuine connection between those two players. And then if you listen to all the post-game press conferences, Austin Matthews, Zach Hyman, they all speak so highly of Jack Campbell just as a human being. Like, they talked about him as a teammate just being a beauty, a great guy. They were like, what a great friend. Can't happen to a better guy. So I'm starting to wonder, is this a case of, you know, obviously Jack Campbell's playing great, but is it a case of these guys maybe just fucking really like Jack Campbell and they get hyped up when he's in net and they play better in front of him?
Maybe.
Like, maybe we're overlooking it in the sense that, you know, kind of like what we like to talk about on the podcast is like, it's not always about stats. It's about the people. Are we seeing that right now with Jack Campbell?
Yeah. I know. I can agree with you there. And just seeing, I mean, they had a lot to say, his teammates, you know, in celebration yesterday. They had him being interviewed, of course, and he was getting emotional. So, you know, you want to think that, you know, guys are good guys for us, as far as we can look into them from a public perspective, right? We can only see so far. So you want to say and think, okay, what I see is good. I mean, most of the time they hold whatever, you know, facade or whatever image character they want to portray. I mean, by all accounts, he seems like a really nice guy. I'm thinking maybe it's more a sense of this is a guy who doesn't have that big contract or that big known pedigree. Maybe doesn't get the recognition he deserves. And so he's fought kind of as like a backup goalie in LA all these years. And maybe now his team is saying, you know, maybe he makes a few key saves that Anderson doesn't make. And maybe it's a sense of rather than really playing up, they're just not being deflated like they were by some softies that Anderson would let in. Right? So if a goalie makes those kind of unexpected saves, those one or two, that can pump up the game on like a, you know, a period to period basis. But overall, in terms of his character, I'd want to say yeah, but then that would make us seem like we're saying that maybe Fred Anderson's got ill character.
No, what I'm saying is that no, I think you're reading too much into whether or not I'm asking you if he's a good guy, because I don't fucking know, and I don't think it matters. It's more so just, you know, the team morale and the chemistry, right? Like, I think that's what we're seeing, right? It's like, I could do a podcast with 10 people, and if that guy was a fucking dickhead, it doesn't matter. His skill set, I don't want to do it with him. So we're not going to have a good time. The show's not going to vibe, and no one's going to give a fuck. So I'm kind of wondering, is that what's happening here? Maybe, you know, it's a part of what you said. Maybe they see a little bit of an underdog story with Jack Campbell, and then the other side of it, they look back and see their buddy that they like chilling with making saves and they want to play hard.
That's a good point. It could be like a chemistry thing in the sense that imagine if it's like you have like, you know, there's always those 3, 4, 5 guys on your team that maybe hang out after, you know, that rotating cast that maybe hangs out after the games or are friends outside the game. And it's their exactly. job, right? It's their life. I'm sure a lot of them are obviously friends outside the game. But maybe it's a little bit different when, like, you know, you're good friends with a few of the young guys. You guys are play Fortnite or play, you know, COD, whatever, at night too. You know, COVID-safe activities like that at this time. as opposed, and that's your goalie, right? You know, you're playing video games, you're talking, you're playing with the goalie. All right, night, guys. You know, you develop that kind of just, I guess, person-to-person relationship. As opposed to, like, imagine if your goalie, and I'm not saying Freddie Anderson is this, but is, like, that serial killer, stiff, loner kind of goalie, or loner kind of, you know, the kind of person who prefers space.
Goalies are definitely
not even just goalies, but just people, right? Everyone has times where they want to be alone, and some people more than others. And maybe if your goalie is that kind of person that likes to kind of keep it professional and kind of stick it to work only, you know, like kind of guy that just wants to have colleagues and not like work friends, he doesn't want to keep it, you know, doesn't want to develop anything beyond that, maybe there is a bit of a extra spark. I don't know. You know, as a
yeah, I mean, I just think about it like at any job that I've ever had, like whether or not we hang out outside of work, it also like it doesn't really matter to me as much as like when we're there and we're working together, we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes you vibe with people, you get on the same wavelength quicker. They make you excited and then they make you better at what you're doing. And last night, seeing those interviews, seeing the real joy in those guys' eyes when they're talking about Jack Campbell, I just felt it, you know, like there's a lot of times in interviews, it's like, oh yeah, he, you know, he had a great game tonight. I just, you know, I'm sure he's being honest, but there's no love. And last night I felt the love. And then that made me think like, okay, maybe there's more to this. And they just fucking really like Jack Campbell. But either way, like you said, if Freddie Anderson is not healthy, this conversation is null and void. But I think it is exciting because, you know, I think Toronto has a really good young team. I think that they can make a deep run. So if they get a goalie that even plays at a B+ during the playoffs, I think we're in for, you know, an exciting little run here.
Now it's nice to have, you know, some positivity, especially in terms of like the media is always hounding the Leafs, always has some sort of negative storm to surround the Leafs with. So it's nice to have someone, you know, who kind of radiates positivity throughout the room, and like the media feeds off that too. So they're sharing that stuff. You know, so you're seeing the memes and the stuff pop up on Instagram and TikTok about the, you know, the nice relationship that they have. So I hope he keeps this a good play up. And, you know, it'll be really, really interesting to see, you know, with, you know, 15, 18, 20 games, whatever that we have left. Actually, maybe a bit more than that.
No, it's under 20.
Under 20 now, yeah. Okay, so whatever amount of games we have left, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how that develops. But I think, again, regardless of what happens, I think Leafs will sit comfortably atop the North. And then, you know, depending on how that fourth spot shakes out in terms of seeding, we know the Canucks, we'll talk about that a little bit later, of course, a bit of a shakeup, bit of a mix up with the COVID situation, but I think Leafs are sitting pretty and I think that they're going to be okay. And I stand by no controversy.
Excellent. Okay, before we move on, obviously, NHL trade deadline is coming up on Monday. We've seen a little bit of movement. Islanders pick up Zajac and Palmieri from the Devils, which is a pretty big move. Gave up a first round, a couple utility guys. So they're making a move. I'm interested to see what happens. I'm interested to see if the Leafs pick up anybody, if they make that change, whether or not they have been lying about Freddie Anderson's so-called lower body injury. We're going to see him get shipped out on Monday. It should be interesting. But let's move on. Baseball. That's all I have to say. Baseball. Okay, I'm excited. We had our first week. Blue Jays are 3-3. I know you watched some of the games. What's some of your takeaways so far?
They look like a 3-3 ball club. You know, some highlights, some lowlights. The lineup is probably underwhelmed, probably as a whole. First three games, you know, I would have said, you know, they're okay, a couple timely hits, things like that. But I'm noticing a lot of solo home runs. You know, Marcus Semien, he's at the top of the lineup right now, 1-2. He's been batting, I think. And so he's hitting a lot of solo home runs. He's got three already, so that's pretty cool.
He does, yeah.
But the problem is, again, there's nobody on base. So I think my first suggestion off the top of the bat is to move him down to maybe the three, four spot, you know, juggle him there for a bit. But the team as a whole, pitching staff, up and down. Again, Tanner Roark picked up right where he left off. I know you love Tanner Roark. You're a big Tanner Roark guy. and he shit the bed, which is too bad. Yeah. To be expected, right? So I assume he'll be replaced soon. What do you think?
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, with the way that it's going, like, you're already putting out, like, Ross Stripling and guys like that. So, I don't know. I don't even know, like, who the fuck do you replace him with at this point. But I agree. A lot of highlights, a lot of lowlights. We saw some good stuff, though. Like, they take down the Yankees. They go 2-1 against the Yankees, which you're not expected to do, right? Obviously, they followed up with losing the series to a really shitty fucking Rangers squad. But just talking about the Yankees right out of the gate, you know, Jordan Romano, he comes in, he gets himself in a little trouble, and then boom, 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 strikeout, and he controls it, sends us into extras. Grichuk, you know, I had to eat my words a little bit. He knocks in that winning RBI, although he had some horrible at-bats that day too. So I'm not even going to take back my take because, you know, one hit when you have two other horrible at-bats, I mean, let's just say they cancel each other out. Merriweather strikes out three to get the save. He looked pretty good. That was the only one I actually saw him pitch, but the eye test tells me that, you know, we might be in for a step up from him. But I have a question for you. Do you like that the MLB continued to include the rule of, in extra innings, they start off with a runner on second? Do you like it?
Oh, man. This is so, like, such a tough question, man, because, like, I like it when my favorite team has a runner on second, but I hate
but it happens on both.
I hate when the other team has it on their no, you know what, overall probably I'd say no, but I will admit that I'm not minding as much as I thought I would, and maybe whether that's because last year was like a sort of like a sample of it, so we kind of got used to it. I think that's probably it. If they had just kind of put it in, thrown it in a full season, that would be kind of maybe difficult to deal with. But because there's a bit of that small sample and that small taste last season, maybe that's why I don't mind it so much. It does help the game if not really go past like 10, 11 innings. So, I mean, that's nice, like, you know, on like weeknight games. If you're watching a late night game, you know it's going to wrap up relatively quickly. And if teams are like actually having like a decent game, like you'll see last night I was watching, I think it was Baltimore and Yankees, I think. And Baltimore scored that runner in extra innings, that second base runner. And then the Yankees got really close to scoring that runner, but he was thrown out at the plate to end the game, finish the game. Nice. So I was like, that's kind of cool. Like the Orioles did that. So the Yankees, you know, the home team's got to match that same action or better at least.
Right.
So I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. And they almost matched it. And then you got thrown out at the plate. It's like, that's the closest kind of example I can see of like that team almost doing what the away team did in the top of the inning. But they get gunned out with a great play. I think it was Anthony Santander, the right fielder, gunned out Gio Urshela. He got tagged in the face. It was funny. He slid like kind of like this, and the glove just went right in his face, and he just completely just stood. I got worried for a second because like looking ahead, maybe he had a neck injury, but he just kind of stopped. Oh. The game stopped. Everything stopped, and it was just it looked funny. And I'm glad he's okay. But the game ended. But I thought, okay, you know what? That was a kind of an example of how that can kind of shorten a game and maybe force the teams to play a little small ball.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the absolute head. I feel like when I first heard about it, I thought I was going to hate it. Even now when we talk about it, it's almost like my gut instinct is to just say, I hate it, I don't like it. But at the same time, we are so hard on the MLB, and we say they don't care about fun, they don't care about changes, they're just old heads, they're stuck in the 1930s still. But then they actually come up with an idea that is, the point is to speed up the game and not to have 19-inning games. And I think, and I have to say, like, at least on paper, there's 162 games. We don't need a lot of these games to go really deep into the 14th, 15th inning. And like you said, it adds a small ball element. Like, basically, you're almost, I wouldn't say guaranteed to score a run, but somebody's probably going to score a run in that 10th. So it forces you to be like, okay, am I going to bunt him over to third, take the out, and then go for the sack fly, like, right away? But then you put yourself in a hole of, okay, I'm going to only get one run, and then there's a chance that they're also going to get one run. So maybe I should try to single that guy home and then hopefully try to get in that second runner. So you know what, I'm excited about the way it's going, and like you said, you get these opportunities for these kind of really random exciting plays that are going to happen in the middle of the season, and I think it's great. But Steven Matz pitched a bit of a gem. Goes 6 1/3, gives up 2 hits, only 1 walk, and 9 Ks. Is that shape of things to come or a flash in the pan?
I hope it's the shape of things to come. You know, I know it was the Rangers, but that's kind of like an impressive line against anybody, right? And especially if you consider that the last couple seasons, especially last year, and I think even the year before that, like one or two pitchers and maybe none outside of Ryu pitched into the seventh inning. Do you remember that? They had that really long, crazy streak.
Yep.
And the fact that Steven Matz comes out and does it in his debut, that's an encouraging sign of things to come at the very least. Maybe it's not a sign of things to come, but, you know, you get a little optimistic about it.
Definitely. I thought he looked great. Obviously, that line, I basically don't care what team that is, like, against, right? Like, we lost the two other games. How hard are we going to be? Like, he got us literally the only win in the series. So I love it. I'm excited. You know what? I don't know. You know, he's had such a rocky couple years that I don't know if this is what we can expect of him. But the fact of the matter is that if Pearson can get healthy, Matt starts giving us more lines like this, Ryu does what Ryu does, then the bottom of the order, you know, maybe doesn't, you know, impact us as greatly because we have, you know, 3 half-decent starting pitchers. But it was a good sign. 9 Ks, 1 walk. I love it. I also like, you know, Semien throwing up that power early. 3 jacks, 6 RBIs in 6 games.
Yeah, man.
I like it. I agree. I think I could see him getting dropped down in the order. I don't know how long he'll stay there, but while they're still figuring things out, I would love to see Charlie Montoyo just spice up the lineup. Like, who gives a shit? Fuck the names. Fuck what they did last year. It's early in the season. We have a young team. They're going to be all over the place. We have a lot of guys that are going to be trying, like, to get back into form that they used to be, or trying to get back into new form, like we've talked about in the past. So I would love to see that. If he's starting to hit bombs, put him into 3.
I agree. No, absolutely. So, you know, and be fluid, right? Like you're saying, just be fluid. You know, ride the hot hand. You know, speaking of hot hands, have you been able to catch a lot of Vladdy at-bats? What are you thinking?
I've seen a few. I think from what I've seen, you know, kind of what you had mentioned a few weeks ago, it seems the plane of his bat has increased. Like, it's starting to come up. It's swinging at least more for, you know, hard contact. He's been saying he's just trying to hit line drives. I would say that is coming a bit more. He's uppercutting it a bit more than we've seen in the past. But, you know, I don't know if that is coming from, you know, directly him trying to change the way he swings the bat, or is just the weight loss and him getting in better shape just letting him swing with more power. But that exit velocity is truly remarkable.
Yeah, man, he pisses the ball all over the field, man. Just fucking piss missiles everywhere. Like 114 miles an hour to open the season up. He had that opposite field blast in his first of the season. Mm-hmm. So really encouraging stuff from him, man, because Vlad, he looks like, you know, he's shaping up to be that kind of guy that even when he's like doing quote unquote bad, he's still like walking a little bit and at least putting the ball in play sort of things. Like he never looks like horrible.
Not Grichuk style.
Yeah, whereas Grichuk can just look like he has absolutely no plan sometimes. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes Vlad looks like he's flailing at it, but he looks like even like if he has like a hack or a half swing, like he can make the ball bounce kind of all over the place, right? He kind of is like
right. His gifts are
like
great.
Yeah, like a pole-to-pole kind of thing. So, you know, he's shaping up to be, you know, decent. You know, we're seeing encouraging things. The launch angle, like you said, is for sure increased, hitting a lot more line drives. Mm-hmm. Even when he pops out, I'm like, ah, it's better than a ground out. Like after last year, I'm like, oh, okay, put it in the air. That's fine. He just missed it. And even ones that, like yesterday, he had a chance with a runner on. And he flew out to left field, but you can tell that he missed it by an inch. And even he knew he missed it by an inch. So he had that chance to tie the game against the Rangers yesterday. And then Rowdy Tellez, it came down to Rowdy Tellez, a pinch hit opportunity, and he struck out. He's now 0-16 to start the season with 6 strikeouts. Josh, what's going on with Rowdy Tellez? What's his fate?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm going to try to stay optimistic. I think that we've seen that, you know, he is a guy that can potentially have a lot of upside with his bat, at least. I mean, I don't really know. He's always been a huge question mark, but he's been a guy too, where he can just fucking shit on a ball when he's hot. And when he's not hot, this is what he does. And he's pretty young, though, so I don't want to see anything super drastic happen with him. I would say keep getting him his at-bats. I would say, you know, usually it takes, you know, 150, 160 at-bats in a season before you really know what kind of year a guy's going to have. So I don't want to, you know, really be that guy to start flying off the deep end. But you don't want to see that many swings and misses. So he's going to have to get in there, get back to the fundamentals, just put the bat on the ball. He has power. So I just want to see what he can do. And then if he can't, you know what? That just frees up, you know, more playing time for Vladdy. Maybe they flip him eventually for another arm and we can see what happens. But I do not want to get there at this point. I do like him. Just, you know, get back to the fundamentals. Bat on the ball. You have the power. The hits will come. What do you think?
I'm hoping the same. Yeah, he looks lost right now. Sorry about that. Which is the only problem, is that he looks like he's kind of lost. You know, maybe he needs a couple more reps to get that confidence back. I feel bad for the guy because he's looked so bad. You know, when Joe Panic seems like a decent, you know, like a more sure thing than Rowdy, then you know you're getting a little bit worried, right? But like you said, it's a really small sample. I'm gonna wait a while till I fly off the handle with it. He's young. you know, he was good last year. Only problem is, you know, like you want to pile those wins on sooner than later. So hopefully, you know, again, that game shouldn't have really come down to Rowdy Tellez in the ninth inning. I think they had plenty of opportunities to win it before that, right? Lots of runners left on base. Mm-hmm. Ryu pitched 7 innings of 2-run ball. And even then, one of those runs kind of came as a result of a Vlad Jr. error at first. Ball thrown to his foot, and he went to short hop scoop it for some reason. You know, it wasn't stretched out by any means. It wasn't a great throw, but it wasn't bad. Should have had it.
Got to make the play.
Yeah, got to make the play, and he missed it. He missed it, and the runner got on and eventually came around to score. So really, it should have been one earned run. So again, can't put too much pressure on Tellez there. But, you know, the Jays are 3-3. Yankees are currently 3-3 as well. Orioles 4-2. They beat up on the Red Sox a little bit, so I think they're shaping up to have a little bit of a basement brawl. I know it's like, again, 6 games into the brand new season, right? Still 100.
I didn't even want to bring up that, you know, Baltimore sits atop of the AL East. It's an absolute fucking joke at this point. But we got the Angels up next. I do want to say, for anybody that missed it, Shohei Ohtani, for the first time in 118 years, he batted second in the lineup in a game that he pitched, okay? He also hit a home run that game. He didn't get the win, but he had 7 strikeouts. We're witnessing something great. The Angels need to sort their shit out. They have a generational player in Mike Trout. Then they have a guy that's breaking 118-year-old records, that's pitching and catching, hitting bombs, striking guys out. They need to be better. They need to put a winning team up. But, yep, so the Blue Jays are up against them next. We got Ross Stripling going tonight. Hopefully he can have a better showing than last week, but I don't have the highest of hopes for him. But, you know, moving on, NBA. Like we said last week, Gary Trent sets a career high in points. Then he absolutely drains a nasty buzzer beater against the Wizards to get a win. That being said, I'm getting excited. They're giving him starter minutes. He's played over 30 minutes for the last 6 games. But the Raptors are 2-5 in the last 7.
I'm going to be that I'm going to be that controversy loving guy and say, how come Gary Trent Jr. can get a buzzer beater in his first couple games, but Pascal couldn't all year?
You know what the funny thing is? When they ran that play, Gary Trent took that ball and he had multiple chances to, like, you know, run a play, set it up for somebody else. But you could just see it. He put that ball on the deck. He didn't give a shit. He was taking that shot. In my head, I was like, okay. So he's feeling, number one, confident enough to do that, confident enough that, you know, that the team and the coaches are going to put the ball in his hands late. And just his age and the fact that we're already a fucking basement-dwelling team, I love to see it, because this is what we talked about. It's like, you made the trade for Powell. You got a guy like Gary Trent. You know, you knew that he has a ton of upside. The last thing I wanted is for them to play him the amount of minutes and give him the role that he had in Portland, or a role that would have been subsequent to filling Norm Powell's, because that's not the point. The point is, you got a 22-year-old with a lot of upside. Let's see what the fuck he can do. So that's exciting. But the Raptors are not playing well. Dan, I'm going to say it, and I'm going to pass it to you. I'm hoping they lose a lot more games and they get a better pick, because this team, even if they squeak in the playoffs, are going to get shellacked in the first round by either the Nets, the 76ers, or the Bucks. So I want to see some young blood on this team next year. I want a high pick. Are you with me?
It's just a question of whether you like want a couple extra games. Four to be exact for the Raptors. If they're going to the playoffs, it's going to be strictly four. Or if you actually do want to start building piece by piece for the future. So I've seen a few hashtags floating around out there on the internet. Hashtag fade for Cade. Hashtag sucks to Suggs. I really like that. I really like hashtag see the sucks to Suggs. That's a really good one. Especially after Suggs' performance in March Madness the other day. That half court shot and the buzzer beater. But yeah, a couple hashtags.
Yeah, that lost me $100. Oh. Yeah, that lost me $100. That shot. Ah. But I mean, UCLA got robbed by some of those, so we can go. But obviously, the Raptors fans, they're with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're at a point where you can't really contend, then what's the point of the playoffs? You know, it's different in certain sports. Like baseball, give me the wild card any day of the week, because if you get hot, you can smash anybody. But we've seen it in the NBA. Let's say they get hot in the playoffs. Let's just say, you know, Embiid goes down, and then they end up, you know, they squeak out a 7-game series against the 76ers. They're going to get clapped in the next round. There's no way you're just going to walk to the finals and steal a championship. So I'd rather get some young blood in there.
Yeah, that's obviously like the best interest of the team. I think, though, like planning a move forward, I have to see a Masai extension before I really start being able to plan forward, because if he just cuts, right? I hate when news goes quiet and dark like this, because then idiots like me have to speculate, right? We can't just sit and wait. But then I have to say, well, I mean, we can like extrapolate like the Masai's way of thinking to kind of maybe try to predict the next couple of years. But if some new regiment comes in, right, after all this, and they do things a completely different way, well, that kind of, you know, that changes the way we predict and forecast all the things that could happen. So I think, and if an extension went in place tomorrow, I'd feel a whole lot better. I know Raptor Nation would feel a whole lot better. But again, if that doesn't happen, and if we have to stay in this kind of perpetual, like, what's next state, I think it's better to go scorched earth, like you said, and kind of just, you know, fade for Cade or sucks to Sug.
I 100% agree. Obviously, if I knew we had Masai for the next 5 years, I would feel a lot better too. But I will say, I think even if Masai stays, it's still in the best interest of the franchise to get just a good young rookie. We haven't had one for a while. Obviously, Malachi Flynn is actually playing like half decently well. He's getting a lot of minutes with Fred and Lowry out. So, I mean, I kind of like that. I don't know if he really has the ability down the line at this point to be a bona fide starter. But, you know, we don't really have that young guy to get really, really excited about at this point, right? Like, Siakam was that guy, but now Siakam, the expectation is different. He needs to be an all-star for this team, right? OG was same kind of thing, except OG, I think we're starting to see his ceiling. He's a phenomenal defender, good three-point shooter. You know, will he be more than that? You know, I kind of highly doubt it, right? And then, you know, Fred was kind of a flyer. So we've gotten lucky in the past with these guys kind of coming up out of nowhere. But I would love to have, you know, that guy that's coming up and you're like, okay, this is going to be an all-star. How do we kind of build around him? I don't know if it's going to happen. The jury is still out. We shall see. But one thing I did like, for anybody that didn't see, the Toronto Raptors played the Lakers a few days ago. OG goes up for a layup. He gets fouled hard by Dennis Schroeder. He holds on to his leg, goes full WWE, picks Schroeder up off the ground, and drops him. Okay, obviously that starts a scuffle. Montrezl Harrell from the Lakers is an absolute just angry dude. He comes running in, but here were my takeaways. It's like Gary Trent Jr. immediately got in front of Harrell, right? He immediately just stops the much bigger defender. OG, okay, I'm gonna just go out and say, like, it was super soft that he picks up Dennis Schroeder and drops him. You're mad. I get it. You want to floor a guy? Whatever. That happens. But then don't put your hands up and say it was an accident. And then he said he was trying to help him up. I'm like, I don't even want to wrap my head around that bullshit. Mm-hmm. But that being said, he gets tossed. Harrell gets tossed. But the NBA came out today. They have also suspended Fred VanVleet for a game. He wasn't even playing that game. He came off the bench. Bembry also got suspended for a game. And then the Lakers lost Horton Tucker. So the Raptors tonight are actually going with the minimum required 8 players. Malachi Flynn is going to get like 35, 38 minutes tonight because there's no Fred. There's no Lowry. We're missing half our team. Utah Watanabe is going to be like one of our top dogs. I mean, we're scrounging. So I don't think losses are going to be too hard to come by for the next little bit.
No, they'll grab a fat one next couple games. I didn't actually see the scrap. I heard about it. I read about it. So I can't comment too much. It's nice to see, again, another positive character trait in favor of Gary Trent Jr. So that's cool. And in terms of, it looks like Adam Silver is going to, you know, hand out that ban and help them fade for Cade. So it looks like, again, just the universe is kind of coming together to trend the Raptors that way. It's coming together and the Raptors themselves are trending that way. And so we'll see. Maybe Malachi Flynn balls out. But, you know, going back to what you said about having that bona fide number one guy, like, I'm imagining, like, a kind of like what Jason Tatum was to Boston. Like, that drafty comes up as an absolute star and comes up and just blows it away. And then you build around that. And, you know, exactly. And then look at the continued success they've had, right? And I'm sure we'll continue to have. But if the Raptors had somebody like that, because you surely, championship teams surely have an Anunoby, and they surely have a Siakam, right? And they surely have a VanVleet. I mean, the Raptors championship team had them, right? And mm-hmm. whether or not they're in starting positions is another conversation, but they just are missing that bona fide, perhaps homegrown. That would be cool. You know, we were hoping for Giannis, right? But, you know, that didn't happen. But a homegrown type, drafted and developed Raptors player that's like a bona fide number one, that would be cool. That'd be something to get really excited about, like some marketable just star face that really takes them to that next level. Because the way this is constructed now, I mean, unfortunately, that's the hardest piece to acquire. Like, every team in every sport would want that homegrown developed number one piece. But I mean, the Raptors have been fortunate to be able to kind of, it seems like, just print those fantastic role-playing kind of dog-like hardworking blue-collar players. So it's that one missing piece, and, you know, it might take 3, 4, or 5 years to kind of, you know, get to that point. But, I mean, that's clearly what is missing at this juncture.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a testament to the organization as a whole, that they're able to find these kind of flyer guys and actually turn them into solid utility pieces. But, you know, we haven't had that luck where, you know, you draft a guy, you know, 16th or 15th, or like Kawhi Leonard, where did he go? He went 14th or 15th in the draft, and then he turns into an absolute top 10 stud. We haven't had that. So, you know, as a Raptors fan, you know, I'll be a little bit homer here in the sense that, you know, I hope they can kind of, you know, just get one of those flyers to work out. I did hear, according to reports from Sham and Blake Murphy of The Atlantic, the Raptors plan to sign Freddie Gillespie, a 6'9" forward. He's mostly played with the Memphis Hustle in the G League. They're trying to add a wing. Obviously, we're hurting for bodies right now, so he's going to get a 10-day contract, you know, and we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens from there.
Speaking of hurting for bodies, real quick, Josh, before we get into our last segment, LeBron and AD out. I'm hearing LeBron could miss 2 to 3 months. So what does that mean?
I think that they're going to definitely lose some more games than they kind of had anticipated. They're already at a point. I believe that they are fifth in the West right now. You know, they're still about 12 or 13 games above 500. So I don't think I've been seeing reports about talking about that they're going to end up kind of at the bottom of the West. I'm not 100% sure I see that happening just because they're starting with, you know, such a good record. Obviously, without AD and LeBron, they are not a good team. They don't have a lot of depth. This is kind of what happens when you put a lot of money into, you know, two main players. But at the same time, they do have, you know, a number of utility vets that if they play well, they can kind of sort it out. Like we saw it last night. You know, Marc Gasol, you know, he's a shell of the guy that he was. But look what happened. He was a shell of a guy that he was with the Raptors, but he is a phenomenal guy to have in your team. He moves the ball well. He sees the court super well. So if he can get hot with his shot, you know, he's half decent and he can hold it down, help hold it down at least. You know, like Montrezl Harrell is not, you know, a bona fide all-star, but he's a great player to have. Dennis Schroeder, same thing. Not a great all-star, big number kind of guy, but he just gets the job done. So I think that, you know, I could see the rest of the season, they go 500, slightly above 500, drop a little bit, but come playoff time, LeBron is not going to be missing those games. Hopefully AD is not either. And I still think that they're going to be, you know, a force in the West come playoff time.
Yeah, maybe that extra rest. Well, we never really experienced this for this amount of time, right, is LeBron being out. So who knows? Maybe rest is a weapon. Yeah. He'll come back and do what he does. But anyway, Josh, let me take you down and say this, my young friend, old friend.
That was uncalled
for. Not for nothing, but I think the Vancouver Canucks should just pack it up and just call it a day, call it a season. Either that or, you know, have some sort of patchwork team made up of the taxi squad and maybe give some AHL guys a shot to finish the season out, just some bodies, right? Of course, you know, reserving extra multiple layers of protection against COVID-19 because it looks like 21 to 25, I can't remember the exact number, members of the team and staff have tested positive for variants. So lots of conflicting reports coming out of there, but just the sheer numbers alone and the word variant got me a little bit worried. And you know, the North Division has been so squeaky clean up to this point that I think we should have zero tolerance and kick them out. See you later. Take care. What do you think?
Sorry, I'm just trying to like take in all the different things that okay. You did in that right there, but I like it. I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure that it would go against, you know, basically their broadcast deals that I don't think they can just like decide to like not play at all. So I'm kind of with you. I think that there needs to be some, you know, agreed upon situation with like how much time can this team legitimately miss? How many games can they postpone before the expectation should be that they should have to put out any guy that they can put out? And that's AHL, that's ECHL. There's a lot of guys out of work right now. I would love to see, like, why don't they just call up like 10 goons from the ECHL that aren't playing right now, throw them out there and let's play some old time hockey. You know, obviously I'm kidding, but yeah, that's where it gets tricky. From what I've heard, you're right. It is variants. I heard that they were able to track it to one specific person or player that contracted it from some kind of public event. That's all that they're really saying. So I don't, you know, it's kind of hard to say without all the details to be like, okay, does that person need to be held accountable, right? Like there is some, you know, I don't want to have any kind of like, for lack of a better term, like COVID shaming, right? Because it can happen to you. You go to the grocery store, it can happen, right? But it can also happen when you're in a position where you shouldn't have been. So that's where we need the details, right? Was this person going to, you know, just going to get groceries or helping a family member or whatever it ends up being? Or were they partying? Were they pulling a James Harden, just getting trash and going to the fucking Rippers? And like, what is the situation? But again, how long can this go on before the expectation is no one cares? Put a team on the ice, especially when, let's be honest, the North is pretty much a lock, right? Yeah. So depending on the team, 16 to 20 games left. Leafs, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal. They're making the playoffs. Very, very, very unlikely that is going to change.
Yeah, no, so that's the thing, too. If it was like Toronto, I'd say, give another week. you know, but like if you got like a team, and not to say that, you know, I mean, it's all about safety at the end of the day. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to joke around too much. But there's actual, obviously, more implications that are involved when there's actually seeding or playoff, you know, eligibility on the line. So, I mean, the Canucks should almost consider themselves fortunate that they're kind of out of it and fading fast. If you look at the games, amount of games played, they're actually not that behind. I think they've still played a couple of games more than most teams. I know Montreal for sure, they played one more game than Montreal. But my problem is, you know, because they're still 6 points behind Montreal for the fourth spot, if I'm not mistaken, or 8 points. They're quite out of it. They're 5 points ahead of Ottawa and 8 points behind Montreal. So they're closer to Ottawa dead last than they are to the next playoff spot. So they should almost count themselves fortunate that, you know, should this get any worse? And I mean, for all intents and purposes, like it sounds like it's getting better. If anything, like the last like 24 hours, maybe I've heard things, you know, there's now some talk them, you know, being able to send that message out saying, you know, we're recovering or we're at home, you know, at least players are saying something. So I know, I mean, Hopefully we're hoping for the best case scenario, of course. But I mean, let's say it does spiral out of control and they run out of dates to postpone games or they do have to cancel a game here or there. Then how do you like determine between two games that they have to miss? How do you determine which one to cancel? Because then you have to start talking about playoff implications because then you're like, if the Canucks play the Senators this game and then the Canucks play the Habs who are just fighting for a playoff spot, right? Or the Canucks play the Flames who are fighting for a playoff spot, you know? Then it's like you have to obviously say, okay, we'll cancel the Ottawa game. And then is that fair to Ottawa then at that point, right? So then now you're starting to pick and choose. Ottawa's way out of it, of course. But, you know, then they're going to, you're bringing in another party that can potentially, you know, complain or be dismayed by the cancellation of a game. So it's just a spider web that I think when you start plucking pieces out of it, spreads to too many other adjacent pieces. There's just too many moving parts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, I think the best thing to do for me, I'd say, you know, call up some young guys who are, you know, maybe fringe cusp players. And if they're okay and they you know, they pass quarantine or whatever, and all the proper protocols are followed, I think, you know, give them a shot to kind of fill those holes in. Anyone that's, you know, feeling winded or feeling like they're going to have some sort of prolonged, you know, ill effects from this, let them go home. Let them go home, man.
It's kind of hard to argue that. I mean, the North Division got lucky that they didn't have a lot of issues early in the season. So they do have a little bit of time where they can, you know, kind of postpone for a little bit. But I agree. I mean, you know, that's what I was saying. And I feel like they should have set that at the beginning of the season. If COVID hits your team, what is the amount of time that your team can actually be shut down like this? So is it 2 weeks? Because then that makes sense, right? So then the players, everyone gets a fair shake to go through, you know, the safe amount of time it takes to get over COVID. And then if you are unfortunately one of the people that has a lot longer extenuating circumstances, that after that 2 weeks, now you are filled in with some other kind of player. But it's interesting. We'll see. You know, hopefully they get better, get back to playing some hockey. But I don't really see them making a playoff. So, like you said, other than it really affecting the standings, I don't know if it has like a huge implication, but I got one for you. Not for nothing, but the Texas Rangers, including a photo of the Odor Batista punch image in his farewell tribute, just pisses me right off. Just pisses me right off. And I realize that this is coming from, you know, a Toronto-based person, a Toronto fan. You know, that was a big, you know, that was a big moment kind of for Blue Jays history. The team was, you know, was on the up. We had that kind of rivalry going on with the Rangers. Batista slides in a second. Maybe a little hard. Gets up, you know, shoves Odor. Okay, I'm going to preface this with, you know, Batista's kind of soft. Like, if you shove a grown man at work, in a baseball game, at the corner store, if you shove a grown man, assume he's going to punch you in the face. Batista, assume it's like everything else. He shoves Odor and gets absolutely cracked, okay? So it is what it is. He got punched. Not a good day for the Blue Jays. But at the same time, kind of like I was talking about with the Raptors, I feel like it brought the team together. Josh Donaldson came running out. Kevin Pillar, they're losing their mind. Those kind of moments bring the team together. But I digress. That's not what this is about. This is about a shitty baseball player playing for a shitty team. He doesn't even crack the roster this year. They trade him away to the Yankees for fucking peanuts. And then, because he's done so little for your garbage franchise, that you have to include a picture of him punching Batista. I thought it was in poor taste, in all seriousness. And I thought it was just, Just unnecessary.
I'm going to take the high road on this one. I'm going to take the adult road, the road that the Rangers could not take, apparently. Odor's terrible. Horrible baseball player. He hung around for 3-4 seasons longer than he should have. He's horrible. Can't hit for shit. The punch against Joey Bats, I can't believe I'm forgetting this. Was that after the bat flip? That was 2016 he got punched, right?
It was post.
Okay, it was post. Yeah. Okay, so first of all, like, how much of a pissy pussy are you? You know what I mean? Like, how much of a baby are you that I think that's your reaction after all that happened? But I digress again. It's just bad taste, man. I thought it was a joke image. And then I saw that it was tweeted from the official Rangers account. And I was actually, like, kind of appalled. Like, well, I was appalled, but I wasn't surprised. Because, again, this is the team that is now hosting 100% capacity baseball games in COVID. So, morons, right? This is, you know, a team that, you know, has shown that sort of, I don't know, classlessness in the past. But even beyond that, like, what are kids supposed to think? Like, how many, what you're, think of your favorite team, okay? Any sport, anything. You have these images imprinted in your mind of, like, great role models and great heroes on your team over the years doing these awesome things. Look at statues that are made of Jumpin' Joe Carter, right? Every Blue Jays fan as a kid knows the Jumpin' Joe Carter image. And now the Texas Rangers are going to tweet an image of Odor punching Bautista. Like, that's some sort of, like, hallmark photo of your franchise, like a memory worth keeping, or like a feat worth accomplishing. Like, that is what you want to show kids. You show kids like these grown men acting like children while they're playing baseball. Not Odor, I'm saying, like, happy, you know, children in jubilation, Jumpin' Joe Carter, right? You know, Barry Bonds, you know, he's a cheater and everything, but whatever, hands in the air, right? All these poses, all these these victory poses. And then you're gonna, you know, you're gonna glorify a punch from a scummy, shitty, borderline player punching another player, and that's like one of his three career highlights. Like, now that's just embarrassing to me. It's not only like shame on the club for just like glorifying that moment, but it's kind of like shame on them for like embarrassing Odor in that way. It's like, here are your three most memorable things, and one has nothing to do with baseball. One proves like you're a hothead. I don't know. Terrible. I agree with you there. That's so embarrassing, and more people should look into that. It's a funny picture nonetheless. Like that, like yeah, honestly, it is like them just saying, like, maybe if they said it as a joke, or even if they tweeted it with like eye emojis or like a smirk emoji, then it makes some sense. But the fact that they put it out there and said, thank you, Ruji, for like all your years. And it's like, that's their, like, just like, it's like community outreach or something. Like, it's something worth praising. So it's kind of stupid that they didn't play into it more. If they were going to play the heel character, then I get it, but they didn't. I don't know. They made it seem like it's like they're still dwelling on it, kind of thing too. Just get Odor out of here. When I saw Odor was traded to the Yankees too, I was like, okay, whatever. Like, still same thing. Like, the guy's a nothing player. So just the fact that a nothing player gets a nothing tribute, that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's like, his stats have been embarrassing for a long time, and then they embarrassed him with that, because you're right. It basically shouted to the world, this man has accomplished nothing, nothing, nothing. So, I mean, and they can't pretend to be the heel, because the Texas Rangers think that they are basically like the good guy in the league. And I know that Jose Bautista was a really unliked guy in the league, not just because of the bat flip. You know, he's had, you know, there's been a lot of reports that just players just don't like him, his attitude, how he carries himself. So I think that they looked at themselves as the martyrs in this situation, and that's why they're still kind of celebrating this, you know, quasi sucker punch. I mean, I use sucker punch lightly, because again, he should have had his hands up and assumed he was going to get punched. But yeah, just a sad day for the Rangers, sad day for a bad baseball player that is going to go and just be lost somewhere in the Yankees organization. And, you know, just pissed me right off when I saw it. But we got to move on. The last segment, our favorite segment, the jerk of the week. Dan, you actually brought this story to me, so tell the fans who our jerk of the week is.
Our jerk of the week this week is Tampa Bay Buccaneers Carlton Davis III. Carlton Davis was caught in a now-deleted tweet saying, man, we gotta stop letting racial slur into Miami. Now, I'm paraphrasing. I believe that's word for word.
No, that's
word
exactly for word. It.
Yeah, man, we gotta stop letting racial slur into Miami. And he made a racial slur, a derogatory term for the Asian community, which has, of course, sparked outrage because it's just terrible. You know, it's terrible at any point in history, but especially during, you know, this time where we're trying to, as a society, shine a spotlight you know, and to show that, you know, there are these sorts of Asian hate crimes and derogatory comments directed at the Asian community as well. And seeing that it's increasing, you know, in the wake of, you know, all of COVID-19 and all the political turbulence that we've experienced this year is just unsettling. And Carlton Davis followed up by saying he did not know what that word meant. He said that he thought, and where he comes from, that word means lame. So by his own admission, he was thinking and saying, man, we gotta stop letting all these lames into Miami. So, you know, is he attacking the Asian community, or by saying lames, is he now, you know, attacking the you know, people who are lame, not cool? Does that, what does that mean even? There's people, it's not 1994 anymore, Josh. I don't, like, is anyone even using that term anymore? Lame? It used to mean that term for when people had, you know, some sort of maybe developmental disorder. Obviously, that's another derogatory term. So he's just digging a hole further. Like, what's this guy talking about?
Oh, it's an absolute joke. I mean, I can't believe that, like, you saw how it turned out for Myers Leonard when you just say, I didn't know what that word meant. Nobody fucking buys it. No one buys that bullshit. And you're right, what you said off air, the fact that this is not getting more attention, especially during a time where Stop Asian Hate is just, it's so prevalent right now. You know, it's come to the forefront that there are serious issues, like you said, because of, particularly because of the COVID situation, the political unrest, the Trump bullshit that he was spouting and the rhetoric that he was spouting has directly correlated to more violence against the Asian community, more hate against the Asian community. Turn on your fucking computer and go to Twitter and you can find hundreds of videos of stuff that has happened in the last year, and not just in the States, in Canada too. So, I mean, him putting this out there and just saying that, it just boggles my mind. Like, what was the best outcome going to be? Like, let's just say, like, I tweeted, gotta stop letting Dan Ippolito into my house. Like, what is the outcome of that tweet, right?
No, really.
Like, am I hoping that somebody sees it and they're going to tell me, okay, Dan Ippolito's not coming over anymore? Because for you to go on and say, gotta stop letting in the blanks into Miami, What is the best outcome here, even if you mean lame, right? So you're a liar, you're a jerk, you're worse than a jerk, but you're our jerk of the week. Again, Carlton Davis, you should be ashamed of yourself. No one's buying your bullshit that you don't know what it means. And the fact that you don't even own up to it makes me even more upset. It's appalling. It's appalling.
No, it's a hideous thing. Again, it just, you know, in a time where we're trying to kind of, you know, combat this stuff, I'm both ashamed that it hasn't been more publicized. Like, I had to dig deep to find this story, which is kind of, you know, kind of strange, right? And it's such a heinous thing to have said, because, you know, it's a slur that, you know, you would think that kind of died away with all the other prejudiced things that, you know, we're still trying to work on more and more, but, you know, that sounds like something he had to, like, research for, something you really dig deep for to spew in times where you want to be hateful like that. So again, you know, that just shows us that we're not buying his bullshit excuse that he didn't know what it meant. He fully knew what it meant. He jumped on Twitter to get God knows what kind of reaction. And, you know, I hope more people kind of speak up about this and there's a little bit of unrest and that, you know, he gets held accountable in some way. Again, we said this many times, you know, together here, Josh, and even Myers Leonard, you know, shortly after he did drop that slur in a similar fashion, like, I know he was dealt some consequences, but again, it kind of just faded away. And I think that that kind of process of it, you know, the public having that short memory and the consequences not really fitting the bill, that needs to change so bad, man. And hopefully, you know, if more light can be shined on this specific incident during this specific time when we're all trying to kind of make amends and kind of shine light on these terrible things, hopefully, you know, that kind of, you know, sees him face some sort of public backlash at the very least.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Dan, that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you to our listeners. Again, this is the Sports Jerks podcast. Leave us a review, leave us a like, follow us on Instagram, TikTok. We love to hear from you. Dan, thank you, sir.
Josh, thank you, and have a good weekend, everybody.